You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Give us land to live righteously!
Hey, that's right. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's me, Richie T., and thank you for finding The Cultural Hall. Find us online at theculturalhall.com or follow us on Facebook by searching The Cultural Hall or follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. No spaces, just at The Cultural Hall. This week, going to start it off with an email that we got from Kimball. Kimball says, "Hey, Richie and the CH gang. First off, I love The Cultural Hall. Thank you so much for doing this. And now, on to my email. I will admit that I have written a novel-length email, so I don't expect this to be read, but guess what, Kimball? I'm reading it right now. It's just that the Lisa Butterworth, last week's episode, number 38, got me a little fired up. As a happily married LDS man who works very hard treating my wife and all other women with the utmost respect, I found Sister Butterworth's comments unjust, disrespectful, untrue, and at times, sexist themselves. Here are a few rebuttal points I have to her comments. Number one, it's unfair that women don't hold the priesthood, he says. God gave men the priesthood. Men didn't give it to themselves. We are governed under his rules, not man's. So, until he says that women will hold the priesthood, it's not going to happen. And honestly, if that ever were to happen and I received a confirmation from the Spirit that it was his will, I'd be totally fine with it. Point number two. Sometimes I wonder why some women are so opposed with getting the priesthood anyway. The priesthood means responsibility. As a boy, I was expected to bless, prepare, and pass a sacrament, collect fast offerings, and go home teaching 4 years before a woman is asked to go visiting teaching. As a man, I'm asked to continue home teaching, give blessings, lead my family, and if the calling requires, preside over certain groups. In short, I am to serve. Now, I'm not saying that I'm not willing to do these things. I try to always serve with the best attitude, and I'm not saying that blessings do not come from service. However, if women are concerned about not getting blessings, there are plenty of opportunities for women to serve and receive blessings for that. Do they need more stuff to do? I doubt it. I know my wife has plenty to do, so if it's not for blessings and it's not for things to do, it must be that they are power hungry, which brings me to my next point. Hard power versus soft power. Sure, a Relief Society president, young women president, and primary president, which, by the way, cannot be a man, is that fair? All have to get high... stuff approved by the bishop. But guess what? So does the elders' quorum president, the high priest group leader, the young men president, the Sunday school president, and the ward mission leader. And it's not like the bishop has carte blanche. He has to go to the stake president and on up the chain. We all have someone to report to. Granted, the leaders up that chain are men, but I'll tell you something, I would never want to be a bishop or higher. Who wants to take on that kind of stress and responsibility? And yes, there are blessings, but there are blessings for everyone in any church. There are blessings for anyone in the church who magnifies their calling. Again, it all comes down to being power hungry. Number four, says Kimball, lack of proper facilities for women. Welcome to the party. In a regular meeting house, there is one person who gets an office, the bishop. All the other men, elders, quorum president, high priest group leader, young men president, don't. I'm an elders quorum president, and guess what? I've got to hold PPIs at my house. Shouldn't I get an office? In fact, why is it that the elders quorum doesn't even get a meeting room? The Relief Society has a room, the primary has a room, but where does the elder quorum meet? Wherever we can find the space. Sometimes it's on the stage, sometimes it's in the choir seat, sometimes in the cultural hall, and last time I checked, there was a closet for every auxiliary. If the young women need more room to store all their junk, I guess it's time to just simplify. Oh, and the comment about needing more room for women to change babies is sexist. I've changed plenty of diapers at church, and I've never complained about having to do that on those fold-down baby changers in the handicap stall in the men's room. What do you need, a cultural hall-sized room to change your baby? Which takes me to my next point. Number five. Basketball courts. Have you ever heard of women's volleyball? Guess where they play? The cultural hall. And how about wedding receptions, primary and mutual activities, ward Christmas parties? If they need a large venue, guess where they hold them? The cultural hall. It's not just a basketball court, it's a cultural hall. Here are a few other gripes from the men's point of view, says Kimball. Who has to set up chairs and take them down for church and state conferences? The men. And this includes the Relief Society room, by the way. While we are taking down the chairs, the women just stand around and chat. Some even keep sitting in their chairs while we work around them. And do we ever get a simple thank you from the women? No. Why? Because it's expected of us. And do any of them think to, oh, I don't know, grab their own chair and fold it up? Of course not. Next point, who has to provide security and help with the setup and cleanup of all Relief Society activities, of which there are way too many? The men. And if not enough men show up to help with the cleanup, who gets the call? The elders, quorum president. One time this happened, and the second counselor of the Relief Society actually said to my wife, well, what is your husband going to do about this? Is he going to come down and help clean? I'm sorry, but I thought that today's strong, independent woman could put away a few tables and chairs and take out their own trash. Well, I guess not. It's up to the men to do that. And then who has to move in and out every family in the ward? It's the men. Kimball goes on to say, sorry about the size of this message. I've just never felt so unjustly criticized in any of the previous podcasts. I haven't even got this fired up over the homosexual episodes. But I just felt that there needed to be a man's response to this woman's position. Again, I love and respect women. I'm not saying men are better than women. We are equal. And if she feels that there is inequality in the church, she needs to step back and look at it from a man's perspective. And I think that she would see things in a much different light. Anyway, thanks for letting me vent. And thanks for letting me download. Kimball from Arizona. And now coming up in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall, we sit down with Kurt Bester.
Thanksgiving Point presents Follow His Light to celebrate their newest garden exhibit, Light of the World. Open Friday, May 11th through Saturday, June 16th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. with special activities on Mother's Day. More information at thanksgivingpoint.org.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
It is the second block of the Cultural Hall, and I'm doing this one solo, mainly because I didn't want to have anyone else here in the room with me and Kurt Bester. So sitting down with Kurt Bester. Now, if you go to theculturalhall.com, you can see a little side project, I like to call it, so that it makes me sound more important, that Kurt Bester and I did about a month or so ago now. There's a little YouTube video of, so I do theater here in Salt Lake, and I played Kurt Bester, and then we arranged, because Kurt and I are friends on Facebook, and now he's sitting in the Cultural Hall, I arranged to have him come be on stage, so go check that out. But Kurt Bester, thank you.
It's good to be here. I think you're solo because nobody else wanted to come.
Yeah.
You know, when you got two, you got the real Kurt Bester and the faux Kurt Bester. That's too much Kurt Bester.
No, it's way too much.
Yeah, so a lot of teeth and hair.
It's funny, too, because yours is a name that you always have to say the first and last name.
I know.
Like, I couldn't just be like, oh, hey, Kurt.
Yeah, no, there's no space between either. It's just Kurt Bester.
Kurt Bester.
I get it all the time. I go to the stores. Hi, Kurt Bester. Hi, Kurt Bester. It's like, and I realize by now that there's a part of me that's kind of a gimmick.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I accept that. I know my place. I know that, I mean, I do something that I think is of worth, but out in the public eye as kind of a pseudo celebrity here in Utah, you are just Kurt Bester. And it's an odd thing. I laugh about it all the time. You know, people come up, wow, there's Kurt Bester buying potatoes at Smith's.
Yeah. Like, Kurt Bester eats potatoes? And it's never Kurt. That's the thing that kills me. It's Kurt. Nope, it's Kurt Bester.
You can call me Kurt Bester or Kurt, whatever you want.
Here, this was interesting, though. Before you came in, I pulled up your Wikipedia, and I always think this is interesting because sometimes there's some true stuff and sometimes there's not. But for people who maybe don't know Kurt Bester, I really want to just be able to call you Kurt, and by the end of this, I'm going to arrive at just calling you Kurt.
Oh,
but for people who don't know Kurt Bester, an Emmy Award winner, I didn't know this about you, for the 1988 Winter Olympics TV themes.
Well, no, actually, that's where Wikipedia deviates a bit. It was an award. I got the Emmy Award along with Sam Carden, for the music we did for the broadcast, ABC's broadcast of the Olympics.
Cool.
So we did music on site in Calgary, and we also did some promo music for it. It was a promo, and we won a sports Emmy, okay? It's the thing they do in New York and June.
Oh, so that's kind of a different thing.
Well, it's all Emmys. You know, they have daytime Emmys. They have sports Emmys. They have nighttime Emmys.
Oh, so it is just
No, it's
cool.
All Emmys. And
you're trying to downplay it, Kurt
Bester.
No,
I mean, you know what's funny is if you do win an Emmy, and I just got Grammy nominated.
Congratulations.
But the point about that is that if you win a Grammy or an Emmy or an Oscar, which I haven't been nominated for, you have to pay for them. don't know if people knew that, but at
no,
all.
No, I didn't
yeah,
know
that. And I think it's like $1,000 for an Emmy. So you can get the certificate. But
for free.
Yeah, but if you want to take that big thing home, you have to pay for it. And I think the Oscar's like $5,000 or something.
Oh, my gosh. So did you do that for your Emmy?
I did. You have to. I mean, you have to. And they have you.
I'll get another one and maybe someone will pay for it.
What are you going to do? You have to. So I did. I bucked up and sold a few things multi-level and bought it.
Sold a little Zango. Sold a little Sunrider.
This was before. This was back in the day when it was only Nu Skin, you know, back in 88. But that was a great experience to have done that. And, you know, it's always nice to get awards. They don't mean too much. I mean, doing the work at that level is what means more to me.
Sure.
Than actually getting the award, because that's kind of relative. It's like the Grammy. And it was something I did with Jenny Oakes Baker that mm-hmm. was nominated.
Who just recently... So you were part of her Grammy nomination?
Yeah.
Recently?
I produced and arranged all the music for that album.
Oh, very cool.
So that was, you know, her album, my album, basically.
That's kind of the reimagining of Disney things,
is that
right?
It is, which was a daunting task.
They're pretty hard to work with.
They're really
protective
of their brand, which they should be. But the hard part is that, you know, you're working with songs that are out of the chutes, kind of provincial, and people kind of roll their eyes sometimes when you say Disney, mm-hmm. except those people that really like Disney, and then we roll our eyes at them.
Oh, Disney!
So, but I have to say, I'm pretty proud of the album. But the point of it is that when you win a Grammy, you get nominated. When you get nominated for a Grammy, at that point, it's a little like a popularity contest. I mean, I was up against Booker T and the MGs, mm-hmm. up against Dave Cause,
saxophone player he was the saxophone player for
that wasn't
like
yellow.
Arsenio Hall or something.
It was someone.
He?
He's done all that. And then there was Daniel Ho, who's Don Ho's son. They got rid of the Hawaiian category, so we were all in pop instrumental.
Okay,
and none of the people I've mentioned sound pop to me.
But I
was more crossover classical with Jenny. Anyway, at a certain point, you can't really, it's apples and oranges, you know, Dave Cause, that's smooth jazz, Kurt and Jenny, that's classical crossover. Who do we like the best? Well, Booker T, he deserves it. I mean, really, he's a legend. I mean, he's a guy that did Green Onions, mm-hmm. you know, if you know that song.
Did you get to go out to the Grammys?
I was performing in Massachusetts, so Jenny went out. And I was texting her, you know, and I had to go and conduct this orchestra. And then
pardon, I can't go to the Grammys. I'm busy conducting an orchestra.
Well, I was working. How about that? I put it that way. So I texted her at intermission, and I was streaming it on my iPad. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, up he pops, and he wins it. So I said, shoot, at least if we lost to a legend. She goes, who's Booker T? I don't even know who it is. She's been in her practice room practicing her music a lot. So.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, there you go. I don't know how we got off on that.
No, that's fine. other things that are here is it talks about Prayer of the Children, which is my first exposure to you. Huh. There was a group of mine. We were called the Sugar Daddies back in high school. And we did kind of an arrangement.
It was like a barbershop quartet.
It was. Oh, and okay. We decided that we would do, there's an arrangement out there of kind of a four-part Prayer of the Children. Yeah. And then the next year there was someone who did it. And then the next year there's someone to do it. So kind of that classic thing. I'll actually play a little bit of that right mm-hmm. here so people can hear it.
Sure.
And so where is that what you would say kind of launched you? Was Prayer of the Children, or
as far as church music goes? No, I've had lots of launching pads way before you went on your mission.
Mm-hmm.
I did an album called Joy Spring, and that's an album. It was the first CD actually ever made in Utah, just so you know.
Really?
Yeah, I never made an LP. I cassettes and the CD. So it was 1988.
Right? So if someone says they have Kurt Bester on vinyl, they're lying.
They're lying. Either that or they transferred it onto vinyl, if that's possible. But I did an album of instrumental hymns, but all done in kind of the style that now people would recognize as, because there's a lot of other people who have kind of adopted that style. But at the time, there wasn't much. There was in the LDS music world, there was, I think, Afterglow or a couple other people
really,
at the time.
Really well-named groups?
Yeah. No,
we'll leave it alone.
Absolutely. Because we're in the Cultural Hall, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from the chapel.
Exactly.
So. Anyway, So at the time, I just wanted to do some, I wanted to do an album, and I heard the theme to On Golden Pond, which I always thought was a great movie and a great theme. So I said, well, you know, I want to take these hymns, and they weren't LDS hymns per se. I was actually raised a Catholic in Wisconsin, and I fell in love with these hymns like All Creatures of Our God and King, and just some epic hymns that have kind of crossed over lots of religions. And I did this album instrumentals. Well, they became popular among missionaries very quickly, and even to this day, they're taken out. You may have heard them, but that was actually the thing that kind of launched me. And the next year, I did a Christmas album called An Heiress Christmas, later to be called Kerbester's Christmas Volume 1 something. But that first Christmas album in 1989, I would say that kind of launched me, at least in the Intermountain area, and then nationally to a certain degree in instrumental music and Christmas music. So that was a pretty seminal moment. Prayer of the Children was done in about 93.
Okay. So a few years later.
Yeah. So, but that was certainly in as far as or choir arranging and choir music, it launched me. I wrote the song about my mission in Yugoslavia, and I lived there obviously for 2 years, and then the war broke out. When I came home, I was struggling with the war. Suddenly now the Serbians were fighting the Croatians and the Bosnians, and I lived in all those places, and now I'm supposed to choose a side, and it didn't make sense to me. So war just never makes sense. Even now, I'm very much a peacenik.
Yeah.
And so I had a hard time with it, so I wrote a song. And that song was not meant to even be public. I just wrote it. And then one day on a whim, I performed it in concert. And it was 1993, performed for a company called Folio. I was performing for them at a Bravenel Hall, a private concert. I didn't have enough music to fill up a concert, so I pulled out that song, and I just kind of played it.
Really?
And it was, you know, I thought it was a special song when I wrote it, but I, you know, nobody knows how a song's going to be perceived. And I think it has an unusual sound to it. It has kind of this Gregorian chant meets sacred whatever, and the words kind of fit, and I don't know, it's one of those things. As a composer, you don't always know how your music does what it does, but people responded very. I remember at the end of that first performance, there was like a big pause between the end and the song, and it was like, it was really strange. It was, I thought, oh, they didn't like it, but it was like nobody was breathing for a minute. And I'm not saying the song is so great, but whatever the reaction people had was really magical. And from that moment on, I've never done a performance that I haven't sung the song.
Took a minute for everybody to digest, but I love that it came about, because you went, all right, I got 40 minutes here, and I got 32 minutes of music. So
before I repeat the first half again, I'll do that tune. And again, I'm not a singer, so I'm known as an instrumentalist, but that's a sung song. In fact, when I do it with a machine that splits my voice into parts.
What is that machine called?
It's a Vocalist, a vocoder. Okay. And as I play, the MIDI notes get turned into, my voice gets turned into those notes. People have seen me do it. It's kind of magical and kind of cool, but it does have this flavor of, like I said, Gregorian chant, takes you to another place. And I've heard lots of people do it. You're, again, too young to know this group, but Three Dog Night does a version of it. The King Singers do a version. David Archuleta does a version.
Elder Archuleta, please.
Oh, that's right. Elder, yes. May he rest in peace. Yeah. That's right. But I'm honored that people sing it, and I'm honored that the song gets used in a way that's really kind of cool. It gets sung at the 9/11 commemoration at Ground Zero by children's groups. It was sung at Columbine because it came out about a year before that. It gets sung for special occasions, and I love that. Sometimes people try to hijack it and use it for political purposes. We'll sing it at this Republican that or this Democrat that, but for the most part, people just sing it when they want to harness that feeling that the song evokes.
Is there any sort of permissions or royalties that go your way as far as that stuff goes?
It'd be nice, yeah. For the most part, people just do it. And I mean, that gets into the whole copyright music thing, which I'm constantly kind of fighting. But people call up, and it's probably on about, and I'm not exaggerating, it's about 750 albums right now.
Oh, wow.
Choirs mostly around the country, high school choirs who record it, the Yale Glee Club, what do they call themselves? The Hasty Put, not Hasty, anyway, the Hale, famous Yale Club does it. It's sung by choirs all over the world, and I get emails probably five or six a day saying, you know, we heard this song, it's being sung by our high school choir this year, it's being danced to by the girls, it's being this or that. And it's cool. It makes me feel good. If you go and Google Prayer of the Children, you will get thousands of views. In fact, some kid just did it on the American Idol of Thailand.
Oh, really?
And he did a version on YouTube where you see him singing all the parts in different windows.
Oh, cool.
And he actually did a pretty good job. I mean, it sounds kind of funny the way he pronounces the words. You know, yeah. Can you hear that better than Chilan? You know, but it's cool. He sounds nice, so.
And that's gotta be pretty amazing.
It's like a child, you know. It's like a child that you gave birth to, and you know, you kind of did all you could do, and then it goes out and has a life of its own and makes you proud. So
let me ask you this: you mentioned being raised a Catholic person, mm-hmm. but then you went on a mission. So let's pick up there.
The first Catholic ever going on a Mormon mission. No, I came born in Wisconsin of goodly parents, but they were goodly Catholic parents. Lived there for until about second grade.
Brothers and sisters?
Oldest of four. So I have two sisters and a brother.
Okay.
All tightly jammed together in a very Mormon-esque way, but we didn't even know what Mormons were. We moved to Utah. But to get to Utah, interesting story, my dad got a teaching opportunity. He was a physical education major. Got a teaching opportunity at two places, University of New Mexico and this place called Brigham Young University. Had no clue what it was.
Really?
Yeah. So we were coming through to go visit New Mexico, and we came through, you know, Utah County, went right down through Heber, down through then landed in Utah County. And Geneva must have been on like a hiatus that day or something. It was a beautiful blue day, a little snow on the mountains, but green, lovely, wonderful. People were unusually happy. And we just thought, this is the place, man.
Yeah.
I mean, so we
Someone else said that same thing once upon a time.
That's what I hear. I'm going to sue him. Yeah. But we landed in Utah County and proceeded to experience living as a Catholic family in Utah County, which is in those days, you know, you said prayers in every class. You said prayers like before high school,
sporting events, a drama thing, band thing,
whatever. There was always somebody who stood up and did a prayer, and they never did my prayer. There was no sign of the cross. It was always take us home safely, and you know the thing you say,
nourish and strengthen our bodies,
all and do us the good that we need. So, yeah. I remember in third grade, a little Catholic boy, somebody said, I said, Mrs. Duncan, and this is my third grade teacher, can I say the prayer? Oh, Kurt, you don't have to. You're a non-Mormon, or non-member. And I said, well, I know, but I've been studying it. I'm ready. I think I can do it, you know. She said, okay. So at the end of the day, you know, I get up. And this was the prayer that was said over the loudspeaker in my elementary school.
Really?
Yeah, see, you're...
No, I'm too young to know this.
We're a lot more PC than we used to be in Utah. It was pretty much parochial schools in Utah County.
Wow.
More so than it is now. So I got up and I folded my arms as I'd seen all the Mormon kids do. And I said the prayer and it was perfect. You know, I mean, it was, you know, bless us all. Like, as they take us home safely, do us the good we need, all the stuff that you do. And at the very end, I said, I did cross myself in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy. And I did the Catholic ending, you know, and of course everybody thought I was, yeah. Cause in those days we were the Satanist church, Bruce R. McConkie said.
Yeah.
So it was, it was an interesting experience being raised. And I didn't become a Mormon until I was almost 19.
Uh-huh.
So I had gone all the way through half of elementary, junior high, and high school as a Catholic kid. Orem High School, there was only like 25 of us that were non-members. And
so what was that like?
It's like you think. It's like you were people liked me, but when you'd ask a girl to go to the prom, it's like, oh, I'd love to go with you, but I can't, you know, I can't go with you because you're a non-member. And it's like, I don't want to marry you. I just want to go to the dance.
What are you thinking we're doing here? I was just saying, you know,
it was
homecoming.
It
right?
was a whole different world. I mean, a whole different world. I went to seminary in junior high because there was this cute girl that I liked, mm-hmm. and it was New Testament. So
so you're like, it's similar enough.
Yeah, you know, and so, but. I think after a while, I kind of enjoyed the notoriety. I enjoyed the attention of being a non-member, to use that term, and it set me apart. And so,
were you always a pretty good-looking kid? I mean, a lot of people will give you a hard time now because it's that good-looking Kurt Bester.
Whatever that it means,
because you got a little bit of longer hair and you got the earring. You are
it's my CTR.
My
My wife, when she met you a couple weeks ago,
she's a fine looking woman too, by the way.
Yeah, I won on that one for sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
But she was looking at you and she said, he is good looking. He is a good looking man. Was that the case back in high school too? Were you kind of like that good looking rebel? Oh, I don't know.
I don't even know how to answer those kind of questions. First of all, that's not in my eyes to say that I'm attractive or not.
Oh, come on. But you know if you are or not.
No, I think I'm fine. I think people misconstrue attractiveness for maybe an interesting personality.
Okay.
Or because, you know, there are people who look good and they have like zero personality,
right?
And they become not attractive
at all.
So I'd like to think that maybe I have a nice personality, but
I think you do.
You're a fine looking man too.
You stop it. I consider myself, the reason why I can say it is I consider myself,
you played me in the,
well,
CSI
but then when
program.
I did myself up, then I considered myself, hey, top notch. But you know, kind of on average, I go, well, I'm better looking than a lot of people, but there are a lot of people that are better looking than me.
In high school, I was. Let's put the looks aside for a minute. But in high school, I was decently popular.
Did you do music, theater, like that?
I did more music than one should ever do. My senior year in high school, I had 5 music classes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's hardly even room.
And then you required English.
Well, I didn't have release time. I didn't go to that building off to the side. I stayed in and had an extra class. So I had jazz band, chamber choir, a cappella choir, orchestra, and band. 5 classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also did drama. Mm-hmm. I did The Music Man. I did...
Who'd you play in The Music Man?
I was Harold Hill.
Of course.
Well, he got trouble, my friend. I did Ally Hackum in Oklahoma. And, you know, I was always playing the obnoxious salesman type, you know, so figure that
That's
out.
That's a brand.
And so you can only be so popular when you are in band.
Sure.
And when you're in drama.
Uh-huh.
Especially in those days. It was, I mean, now the world, I mean, look, one of the richest guys in the world is Zuckerberg, right?
Sure.
Well, he would have been made fun of in my high school.
Yeah.
But now you can say blessed are the geeks, right?
Yeah.
They have inherited the earth.
The entire earth, it seems.
I was popular enough, but that moniker of non-member was a big deal. It was a big deal. I mean, in those days, you could not... That was a bit of an asterisk by my name.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Kurt's such a great guy, but you know he's not a member. You know, or it'd be like, God, he's such a good guy. I can't believe he's not Mormon.
Yeah, you're really great. What's the deal with this Mormon thing, Kurt? Why not? Why did you get a lot of that?
I had a lot of that. I remember one girl came up to me, and she was kind of, I remember she was about 6 feet tall, but a big girl, and she came up and kind of put her arm around my shoulders and said, you know, Kurt, how can you believe a lie? And so if people want to know why it took me so long to become Mormon, it probably was stuff like that. It's like when it's so in your face, it kind of is not attractive, you know, I mean,
sure.
At that time. But I'm a kid and I want to fit in. And so, I mean, I'd go to the seminary stuff. I was always invited to all the firesides. And I remember going to the Manti Temple with all the seminary kids.
To the big pageant and stuff?
Well, yeah, with the pageant. Then we, you know, you have the testimony meeting on the grass, mm-hmm. and as you're eating your Subway sandwich.
Yeah.
And I thought it was cool and, you know, I enjoyed it, but... I don't know. I just didn't have a real connection to religion per se. I was Catholic, but and I'll tell you the other reason. We used to go to church in our ski clothes, Catholic church.
There you go.
And then, you know, 1 hour later, we're on the way up to Alta laughing at all our friends who had to go to church 3 times a day. And in those days, it wasn't consolidated. So it was like you were in your
you
suit.
You went to church in the morning, then in the afternoon, and then again at night. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to join that church. I mean, it's like here I am skiing on Sunday, and nobody was skiing in those days on Sunday. So it was like, you know, I kind of like where I am. But I know you're going to ask a question anyway. So I finally.
Hold on. We're going to get into.
We got to take a break.
Yeah, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and find out how it is that we finally got you. And I want to talk a little bit about that too. That's coming up in the third block.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, here in the third block, sitting down with Kurt Bester, LDS. He would say not a singer, he would say a musician, an instrumentalist.
Composer, performer.
Composer, performer. And we were just about to the point, you're born and raised in Utah County, and but not a member of the church, born and raised Catholic.
Catholic.
Moved to Utah County as your dad was a teacher down at BYU. Got to be about 19 years old. So let's pick up there. Not a member of the church.
Yeah.
All through high school.
Right.
Had to deal with dating. Then
right.
What?
So I met a girl.
Really?
No, I it happened about the same time. I was on a tour with the Johnny Whitaker Show.
Okay.
Johnny Whitaker, and again, you're too young.
Yes.
But you have kind of reddish hair.
Yeah.
He's the curly redheaded kid on Buffy and Jody, the Family Affair.
Okay.
Okay. The hipsters in the audience are going to know who this is. Your mom and dad would know who it is. But it was a show about Mr. French, the butler, two little kids. It was a big show on national TV. And,
okay.
And the curly redheaded kid was a Mormon kid named Johnny Whitaker. So when you're a child star and you get older and you don't have any work, you go on like a musical
tour. That doesn't happen, does it?
You either get into drugs or you go on a musical tour.
Well, stand up. I'm Johnny Whitaker, the stand up comedian.
Johnny Whitaker, he actually had a pretty good voice and a little tap dancer type. And we had a band. It was mostly guys from the old Donnie Marie show who had just gotten released and were out of work. And so we all went on this tour and we went up. And while I was on the tour, I was just out of high school. And, you know, it was everybody in the show was Mormon except me. And so
literally everyone?
Everybody. Yeah, everybody in the show. I mean, there was people like Denny Crockett who wrote Like Unto Us and his wife, Terry Crockett, and their son was in that a cappella group Vocal Point.
Okay.
That little kid with the blonde hair and the glasses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
So I'm crossing generations here. So McKay.
Thanks for bringing it up for the young kids.
Anyway, so during that trip, you know, I got a lot of pressures like, hey, you know, you're almost 19 years old. Have you ever thought about becoming a Mormon and going on mission?
Which is such a funny thing, because you think of going on tour with musicians and then you say temptations and pressures and you think, oh yeah, drugs, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, going on tour with a big musician. Yeah, and instead of drugs,
it wasn't drugs up my nose,
about a
it
mission?
Was Book of Mormon in my hand. So, I mean, there was and I'd thought about Mormonism, obviously living in Utah County since I was in third grade. I mean, you knew everything about it. I knew tons about the dogma. I knew all kinds of stuff.
I always consider everyone to be a little bit Mormon, even if they're not. Like,
oh, yeah.
Everyone in Utah is a little bit Mormon.
Yeah, I mean, and before you know it, you're kind of saying things, you know, you're talking about it. It's, you know.
Oh, I know that with every fiber of my being. What? No!
Beyond a shadow of a doubt, that's right. Well, so I kind of made the decision that, you know, at this stage of my life, it answered a lot of questions, mainly about, you know, where we came from, why we're here, just those kind of questions. I always was struggled a little bit with some of the more regional things about Mormonism
like the
traveling across in the hand carts and Brigham Young and some of his things and polygamy. I never understood that. I don't even know why that even had to be a part of anything. It just doesn't make sense. I'm being honest about that. And so at the time, it really answered a lot of questions. And so I came home and told my parents that I was going to become a Mormon. And my mom said, well, why don't you come to church with all of us? I guess everybody had come to the same conclusion about
the same time.
So yeah, the whole best.
We already did this, Kurt. we were kind of nervous about talking to you about it.
We all showed up at church after I got back from. We all went to church the very same time. I forget the exact date, but we all walked over to the church, which was unusual. You know, nobody walks to Mormon church, even though it's across the street.
Yeah,
so
you still drive, which I don't
get
either.
In the suburban. We're going across the street to church. So yeah. We went to the church, and I mean, it was kind of epic because the Bester family had been, you know, the recipient.
Well, you were that family.
We were the family that had been receiving Book of Mormons and Monday night cookies for decade, you know, or more. So, yeah, we did. And we all became Mormon on October 4th, 1976. And then, of course, the next question is, so when are you going on the mission now that you're Mormon? So we waited a year. In the meantime, I had met a girl, and she said she wasn't going to marry anybody who wasn't an RM.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she wanted to marry a nurse. You know, I thought so. So I, you know, I
cute,
went on.
Cute girl?
Yeah. My first wife.
Oh,
so,
really?
She,
oh, okay. Well, let's go this way then.
No, I went to Yugoslavia on my mission, which was a communist country. It was against the law to tract. So I played.
So what did you do?
I played piano in a lounge. Taught piano lessons, played American football out in the park and attracted people that way. And just whatever you could do.
Really?
Sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds great. What was this knocking doors in Cleveland that I did?
And I had long hair, about as long as it is now.
Really?
Because in those days, this was 77.
Sure.
If you had short hair, like you got nicely cropped hair now, that's which is hip and happening. But in those days, nobody had long hair. Nobody had short hair. Short hair was CIA or Army or
the
something.
The man.
So we just kept our hair, you know, clean, but it was long. We didn't wear suits and ties. We just wore normal P-Day clothes every day. In fact, I left my suit up in the mission home in Vienna.
Hmm.
And I'll never forget traveling with my mission president down to Yugoslavia. And he said, now, I don't want you to call me president because you're really not there as missionaries. You're there as members of your church who are going to go to school. And so don't call me president. Just call me Ken. And so we would be like, hey, Ken, are we almost there? Ken? Hey, Ken, what's for dinner? I mean, we played it up, but anyway, I could go
what was that like though because I mean
it was bizarre. It was cool. I mean, it was a perfect mission for me because I always felt weird banging on doors, talking to people about something that was very personal, and most people didn't want to talk to me. And I mean, all the stuff you went through in Cleveland, I would have lasted a week. So for me, it was the perfect, I'm a talker, so it was the perfect place. I mean, learning the language, I actually learned two languages, German and Yugoslavian, Serbo-Croatian. It was great. Came back with big zero as far as converts go, but
plenty of seeds planted.
Maybe furrows dug. I put it that way. Yeah. It wasn't even seeds. We were just digging furrows. But
were you allowed to talk about the church if people asked you about it?
If they ask us, but you couldn't approach. You couldn't talk to them, and we were kind of nervous because we had this kind of cockeyed idea that everybody's communist and they're gonna, you know, they want to take us and put us in gulags. Well, it was probably a bit overdone.
Well, and it's a different time though, certainly too, because this is before the Berlin Wall. This is before that huge fall of communism.
So it was behind the Iron Curtain, but we were still all kind of following the Ezra Taft Benson school of communistic, you know, fear. And I think we probably played it up a bit much, but you know, we were safe. So we never write letters home saying, hey, you know, we got somebody ready for baptism. It's like, well, we might go swimming with, and then
really,
code words
around
like
it.
I said,
really?
I think it was a bit much, but there were only six missionaries when I was there. Two of them were about 800 miles away and the other two were about 250 miles away. And so I was in Belgrade at first, and there were just two missionaries and two Mormons. One was a 70-year-old man and the other was a 20-year-old girl.
Was that difficult?
Yeah.
It was?
It was, because, well, you know.
Because you're a 19-year-old, 20-year-old boy going, well, I like 20-year-old women.
I had a girl waiting for me. It was more from her perspective, because her field that was white and ready to harvest for marriage was two missionaries.
Yeah.
So take your pick. And so
what was she doing in Belgrade?
She was Yugoslavian.
Oh,
she had become Mormon in Switzerland and then gone back and was kind of one of the early Mormons. We didn't have a Book of Mormon. There was no Book of Mormon, so we'd kind of translate ourselves. And, you know, I think I translated My Father Dwelt in the Tent and, you know, used that as my spiritual.
Hey, let me pass this little spiritual thought along. Because one of the things that though it was difficult about my mission, being able to knock doors, is I was able to be like, okay, you know what, today I felt like I made some connections and stuff like that. How, you know, you came home, how did you know if you'd done what you were supposed to, or how did you know?
You didn't. I mean, you didn't really know. You felt good that you had done what you were supposed to do and hopefully behaved yourself a decent amount, didn't go to too many R-rated movies. And I mean, there was no way to gauge it based on typical
How did you feel about it?
I felt great. I mean, I have no regrets. To me, I felt culturally, I exposed myself to other people. I think I was a good guy. I think I used my music in a good way. It was a good mission for me because, like I said, I've never really gauged myself by the traditional measurements of Mormonism, and I would have a hard time doing that. And even in those days, it was hard for me to just I know what it's like to be on the other side. And for someone to say, hey, you know, your church is wrong, let me tell you about our church, which is right. It's awkward. It's awkward talking about that. It's a very uncomfortable discussion, even to this day for me. I mean, I'm safe in Utah. I can talk about Mormonism, but the other side of things.
Sure.
It carries with it a very awkward thing. So I was not comfortable with the normal mission, but Yugoslavia was kind of the right place for me, to be honest. And, you know, I mean, I didn't baptize anybody, but... you know, I think I did some good and did a lot of good for myself.
So you came home.
Came home, got married, got engaged, and I got home.
To the girl who had been writing you. How did that go? You literally the night you came home?
Yeah. Yeah. I went over to my stake president's house at about 9 o'clock, you know, because you want to get released so they can kiss after you get engaged.
Is that why?
Well, it was.
It was for me too. Don't
pretty
worry
much
about
hormonal
it.
Reasons. You
sure.
Know? She talked about marriage, and as I got closer to coming home, it was starting to be planned. So 2 months later, we got married.
So how did you ask her? I mean, because you're just barely home.
I don't think I even asked her. I think it was already a done deal. I don't really remember. I just was like, okay, next, you're my next companion. I don't know. I don't remember what.
Was it like that? Did you have kind of that weird thing when you came home and didn't have a companion around? That for me was very difficult.
You know, I was weird when I came home. I mean, because especially in those days, you know, you come home to America, things were so different in Yugoslavia. It's like the cars are massive in America and the houses are big and it's clean and people are eating, you know, huge amounts of food compared to what they eat in Europe. And that's still kind of the case.
Sure.
And, so it was a little strange for me, but I had been raised in a pretty disciplined house, got to practice piano. Got to go to be on the swimming team. You got to get straight A's. You know, there was always this real strive for success. And so I was kind of used to that. It didn't bother me to get up early, and that wasn't any different. So the only thing coming home, I just went on. I got married 2 months later. I literally got home October 20-something, and I got married December 27th.
Really? A couple days after Christmas, too. Get it there.
Yeah, well, you know, that was it. So, I mean, the cultural hall was filled with Christmas trees, if I remember, you know, it's anything we could do to cover up the cultural hall.
Sure. So how was that though? Because you made the mention already that you came home and that this was your first wife that we're speaking of.
Yes. Yes. As opposed to the others.
Cause you're remarried now.
I laugh about it, Richie, cause you know, my personal life has been bantied about. And so it's kind of, I have to laugh. It's like, sure. I've been married 3 times.
Oh, I didn't. I wasn't aware of 3. I was only aware of 2 times.
Gotta do your research, man.
I know.
Anyway,
shame on me.
No, it's all right. I like to say that I've done big love one wife at a time. So, and the second wife I was married very briefly, literally a year and a half.
Just
we were only together. All the above. You know, I mean, I'm not like I tell my girls from my first marriage. I have 2 girls, a 30-year-old and a 25-year-old. I don't regret being married to their mother, even though it wasn't forever. It was 20 years, and I had 2 great daughters, and I had great time. I had a good time. I mean, a lot of good things. I think people that say, "Oh, I should have never married her," you know, I mean, what a miserable life. You go 20 years and don't like one thing. I had I had very good experiences,
sure.
But it wasn't forever. And number 2 was brief little thing. And
kind of a rebound, would you say?
Oh, I'm sure that's a pretty popular term. She definitely was yin to my first wife's yang. It wasn't a good decision. And then I waited about a year and a half, long time in my world. And finally, I found a woman that just loves me for me, which is not easy, I think. I mean, I think it'd be weird to be married to someone like me. You know, I mean, I don't have a normal job. I'm unusual kind of personality. I'm in the public eye, which is a lot of women don't like to be. I mean, people come up to me and they go walk right past my wife and go to me. Luckily, I have a very interesting wife. She's from Kenya. She's not even from America. And she's so unique and wonderful and she listens as opposed to me who talks all the time.
Sure.
And so she's the perfect wife to fit with me. We have a 3-year-old daughter, so, you know, still
How did you meet a woman from Kenya?
Well, the quick story. She worked on the movie Out of Africa.
Okay.
Robert Redford's assistant and Sidney Pollack's assistant, and she'd never been to America. After the movie was over, they flew her to America as kind of a reward.
We've got a husband for you.
No, it wasn't that. But she came to Sundance and started working up at the ski resort.
Okay.
I, in the meantime, was a film composing fellow. That's a fellowship I received from the Institute, and started learning about film composing. And I remember meeting this girl, you know, from Kenya. It was odd because she's white, and she was pretty, but that, you know, I didn't think much about it because, you know, I...
But it is certainly a striking thing to think, because when I hear Kenyan, I don't assume a white person.
No. I mean, you figure so. She runs marathons, right?
Yeah.
And she's... And she,
Your words, not mine.
And she doesn't need copper tone.
Yeah.
I remembered her, but 10 years went by.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you met her that much previous?
I met her back in 87.
Okay.
And I was married. So I met her and, hi, how are you? She doesn't remember me meeting her. So that, you know, I didn't make as much of an impression
on
her.
So take that, Kurt Bester.
No, absolutely.
Do you appreciate that part about her?
I'll tell you. I've been married to two musicians and a non-musician. And I think sometimes it works because she, you know... Maybe there's not enough room in the spotlight for both, and I'm not giving it up. So, you know, she doesn't like publicity, and she thinks it's goofy that I'm a celebrity. It makes her laugh, and she makes fun of me all the time.
Yeah.
So
my wife, very much the same person. Oh. If I ever need a little bit of humility, hey, sweetheart, what do you think of this? It's okay. Thank you for bringing me down to a level of reality.
The bathroom still stinks after you leave. I
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
That's the politest way I could think to say it.
Yeah.
Anyway, people Google my life all the time and they know all the stories and there's articles out there. It's hard to be in the public eye and having gone through that sort of thing. And my wife, she's not Mormon. She's not really anything. She's Anglican, I guess. And she's kind of live and let live kind of person. And I love that about her because she has absolutely no judgment. She doesn't look at me and think, oh, you know, you were married before. That's big strike against you. Oh, you don't have a real job, or, you know, you're not a bishop in your church or whatever. She just knows me. It's really refreshing, I have to say. And you can tell she's been raised in a place that's where she was raised as a minority. She was raised among blacks and Maasai warriors. Her dad was a famous safari guide. And,
oh, wow.
And she's still in the safari business. So we go to Kenya all the time. And it's just great. She's just great. And I would say if anybody wants marital advice from Kurt Bester, I'm sure they're waiting for it. You know, just be yourself. And if you can find somebody that loves you for you, you're way ahead of most people.
Does she know much about the church?
Yeah, she's learning more and more. I mean, we've been married 9 years, so she's lived here for 9.5. She moved away, when she worked for Sundance, she wasn't really around Mormons very much, and then she didn't really associate much. And then she moved up to Idaho, but to Boise, which is a little less Mormon. And but since she's come back, we live in the Avenues, so again, we're not right around Mormons all the time.
Yeah, and it's not in Avenues for those people who live outside of Utah and listening to it. It's kind of that liberal, progressive part of Utah.
Yeah, it's we're right next to the Gayborhood, so that gives you an idea. You know, she's getting to know. It's an interesting thing. I find myself having to talk about it all the time. I'm constantly having to say, well, the reason that person asked you why you only have one child. And which is kind of for her a highly offensive personal thing to ask.
Oh, really?
She said, you know, somebody says, oh, you only have one child? How come you only have one child? And she wants to say, you know, she wants to like, she go, why did they ask me that question? Well, maybe I can. Maybe my uterus fell out or something.
Yeah.
She wants to say something to put them in their place. But I said, honey, it's just we live in such a unique culture that people don't think about it. For her, when people talk about religion, it just really makes her feel uncomfortable. It's like, that's a very, very personal thing. And you're going to ask me what I believe, and you're going to tell me that what I believe is not right and yours is right. And so she really, she doesn't enjoy that part of it. And it's kind of in your face a lot when you're here in Utah. So
has that been tricky for you then?
No. I mean, it's not tricky for me.
Because here's where I'm leading this.
I'm ready.
So when you sent me an email,
section four. This is now we're going into section four of the show.
Yeah. when I sent you an email saying, hey, let's get you on the Cultural Hall, you sent this response. It says, I've been a little reticent to appear on the Cultural Hall since my church status is something that is continually discussed and a source of irritation. I certainly have much in my world that intersects the LDS world with movie scores, CDs, etc., and was described as a Mormon celeb back in the day. I just haven't been sure what the purpose of your show is and whether or not I fit in there anymore. So then you say, I guess I should leave it up to your decision. So flipping
heck.
And
you said, don't stress. Don't stress about it, Kurt.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure that we all types, all are welcome in the Culture Hall. That's why it's the Culture Hall. So then from that, I kind of get that maybe as far as church activity goes in the last few years.
I haven't been to church for a while, Richie.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been. And you know, I was on the car. Before I came in, I thought, we'll be talking about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
While it is a very personal thing for me, and saying whether you're inactive or active is a bit like Esther Prynne in The Scarlet Letter wearing, you know, an A on your sweater.
Exactly.
I mean, it really is. You in Utah, if you're running for an office and you say you're an inactive Mormon, that's kind of the kiss of death.
Yeah, you're not running for office anymore.
Yeah, I mean, so unless you're running in the Adventist.
Yeah.
But it's a very... I haven't been to church for a long time, and it's not, I'm not making some anti-Mormon statement. I'm not even saying where I am. I tell my kids this all the time because my two older kids are very active.
Mm-hmm.
I say, look, your dad, I just don't know. I just don't know what you profess to know and what everybody knows beyond a shadow of a doubt. I don't know. It's not like I know something else. It's just, I'm very, very simple when it comes to believing things that I can't see, believing in things that seem mystical and magical and things that seem puzzling, you know, be it blacks in a priesthood or polygamy or some mm-hmm. of those things. And at a certain point, I just have to, maybe it's a little bit the trauma of my life and things that maybe are my own doing, but I just had to pull back and say, you know, I can't just go around and say, hey, 1,000 kids in youth conference, I'm Kurt Bester and this is what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, you know, Kurt Bester got divorced and he got divorced again. What in the world's going on? It must be drugs. Must be something. Yeah. It's like you live in the public eye, and I just had to kind of suck back and say, enough, you know, don't use me. Don't use my name to support your cause. Don't use my name to support your cause. Here's what I believe, as much as I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, so I will wear the big IA on my sweater, but, you know, I'm the same guy that I've ever been in terms of my, any goodness I might have. I feel like I'm about that. And the music that I write now is just as elevated as it's ever been when I'm called to write music like that. Mm-hmm. Music that I write that is very deep and spiritual to me is the same, coming from the same place it ever was. I always had a hard time with the dogmas and the isms of things. So when people said, oh, that song, you know, that you wrote, you must have written it with the Holy Spirit. Well, I didn't know what I still don't know really what the Holy Spirit is. I don't understand that. And this is coming from someone who went on a mission, although
sure.
I'll be a little weird. And I taught a lot of gospel doctrine classes, but real honestly, I had to kind of strip it away and say, I just don't know. I don't know these things. And I reserve the right to know them as I get to know them, but I have to do it in my own way. And I can't just raise my hand to the square and say something, because you're asked to do that as a Mormon. You're mm-hmm. asked to do that day after day after day. You have to do it in church, do it in class, do it. You have to say, you know, and it was overwhelming for me. So that's kind of where I am. You know, mm-hmm. it's not anything like, I really want to smoke pot, so I better quit the Mormon church.
Right.
It has nothing to do with that. I don't smoke pot, but
yeah.
I just
so everyone knows, there is that disclaimer. I don't smoke marijuana,
but yeah, I haven't talked about it a lot, but the problem is it's talked about.
Sure.
Whether I talk about it or not. So I enjoy actually coming on a show like this. And you probably long since stopped the tape, but
no, I'm still.
But
going.
The fact of the matter is, I enjoy coming on a show like this because I think it's good for the culture to realize that there are people on all spectrums of belief, even within the culture, and that it's not really good to do the black and white thing. Just like it's good not to do Republican Democrat. The polarization of it leaves a lot of people feeling left out. They're like, man, all these people get up in testimony meeting and say they know this is true, and man, it doesn't sound right to me, and I don't know it, but so I must, something's wrong with me, you know. Mm-hmm. And you quickly feel, you know,
Like that, you're not part of it.
Yeah. So I just don't. And the pressure of being a Mormon celebrity is people want to hold you up and they want to wrap their testimony around you. And, sure. I didn't want that because, you know, I didn't know all the stuff that people probably thought I knew. I just am me trying to make sense of it all. And so, you know, I took a little of the pressure off myself just by saying, okay. The interesting thing that happens, though, when you do kind of, and it was public, I got divorced and the whole thing came out in the newspaper, famous article in the Deseret News. And people, then they start pushing you off. Then they push you off the pedestal. I mean, they want to kick you because.
Sure. If you're not going to be the example that they want you to be, then get down off the pulpit.
Yeah, and there are plenty of examples of famous folks, people that you've had on your show, and a lot of folks that might have now be in the gay world, or you had that feminist Mormon on the a while back that I really enjoyed.
Joanna Brooks.
And,
she's great.
And I think there are a lot of people like her, and there are a lot of people like maybe like me, or, you know. There's people that just say, you know, I like the culture. I'm a product of the culture. I contribute to the culture, but they won't let me in, or I'd choose not to be in, or whatever. I don't know where I am. So,
well, it's interesting that you point that out, because as I was talking about having you be on the episode, someone's like, I saw him at the Bayou the other night.
Oh, I was at the Bayou.
Which is a bar in downtown Salt Lake. And I was just like, you know what? I go to bars. And so it makes me wonder.
I don't think I was drinking the beer there. They have a lot of good beers at the Bayou, but I'm not a beer drinker, even though I'm from Wisconsin. So, there you go.
But see, that's the thing that I wonder is, you know, I'm by no means a Mormon celeb, but, you know, people that would know that I'm Mormon and I go into a bar, but I can just be at a bar with friends.
For the radio from hell.
Yeah. You know, I actually haven't talked much about that. The show that I work for in my day job is called Radio from Hell. And there's a lot of people that are like, how do you balance that? How do you deal with what that is? And it's just, you know, I'm glad that you're willing to be open about everything, because you know what? That's what the Cultural Hall is about. It's it's a place where you just share what's going on. There's not anyone going, now, Kurt, I think you really need to get back. I mean,
well, I'm sure they would. My family would love it. My neighbors would love it that know me. But it's just a personal journey, and it should be a personal journey for everybody. It works best when everybody comes up with their own salvation and their own. It works better that way.
Yeah,
otherwise, we're all having to conform, and you know, you're not going to see me in a Mr. Max suit.
Yeah. Or cut hair? Do you think cut hair as you get?
I might be cutting my hair, because you know, at a certain point when you're my age, Well, see, I got my earring when I would turn 50.
Uh-huh.
And I got the earring because I became a grandpa. And I just had to do something to
I can't be 50. I can't be a grandpa.
So I went and got an earring. And I actually have two grandkids, but I only have one earring, just so you know. Just so you're not looking around wondering where the other one is.
Jeez, hey, Kurt.
Anyway, it's I'm glad I had a chance to come and talk about this stuff, because it's being talked about. And I'm a celebrity in a different way now, but there are some people that won't come to my shows. And it was in the paper back 12 years ago or 10 years ago when the article came out. There were letters.
Do you care to mention at all what the article addressed?
Oh, it's just all what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was my divorce, and I'd been just got divorced a second time. And it's the name of the article was Doug Robinson wrote it, and he won an award for it, by the way.
Yeah. I
called him up and I said, hey, did you win for best fiction, huh? Anyway, the approach was public acclaim, private discord. So it was kind of a personal thing. It was a big, huge three-page article. And it was talking about, you know, interview people that knew me and saying maybe I was too in love with my celebrity and that I had lost my testimony. And
fall
all those
from grace.
Yeah. And they can think what they want. And I am the same person. And in some ways, I'm a little more honest than I might have been in the early days, because, you know, there was a lot of pressure to know and be some elevated being.
Sure.
But, you know, I did a lot of music for the church, and I still do to a certain degree. I still write music for the Tab Choir on occasion. There are certain things I can't do. If you're not active, you can't do certain things. But
yeah, holding a temple recommend, right?
Well, for the
most
part.
Or is it just active?
I don't even know what the rule is per se, but there's certain things that, you know, you have to be perceived at, which is interesting. I mean, it's a whole different topic and we have time, but, you know, it's supposed to be a private thing between you and God and your bishop, I guess. But for some things, you can't be an actor if you're an inactive Mormon, you can't be in certain productions. Well, sure. How are they going to know that? They're supposed then they got to know your personal stuff. It's a
because
little awkward.
Kurt, what happens if they see the guy playing Peter at the Bayou? I think what people would argue on the other side of that, and I know.
You're in a theater business, and you sure. meet a lot of people who
straddle
lines.
A lot of assumptions that are made sure. by people. I know. Oh, that guy has to be. Oh, that everyone there at that theater must certainly be members of the church.
Well, we fear a lot, and I'm not a big fan of fear. People fear. It's like, oh, don't let them listen to that music, or our kids might go astray. Oh, don't let them talk to that gay guy, or they might become gay. It's fear based, and it's really not helpful. And there's nothing to fear of people going through their own journeys. So, I thought about moving away for a while. I did. I really thought, this is crazy here. This planet Utah, man, is nuts. Yeah. But I love it here. I love the people. I love I love skiing. And I made a career here, and I have a certain personality here that I can use for filling up Bravena Hall. And so I'm going to stay, and I think I can be part of a healthy change and dialogue. And who knows where I'll be 10 years from now when I sure. come back for my next visit on the Cultural Hall.
I know where he'll be.
Oh, I'll be, yes. all in favor, please manifest
there it. There it is. So one thing that we have a couple of questions that we ask everyone yes. that comes into the Cultural Hall.
Yes.
First question is, do you have a calling right now?
I have a calling, yes. I am I invented Christmas,
Mm-hmm. I am aware. Kurt Bester, the inventor of Christmas.
And so my present calling is I am the Utah ward choir leader for the entire state of Utah.
Okay.
Specializing in Christmas music only.
Perfect. And then if you could pick your own calling within the church, you could pick whatever you wanted to be, what would you pick to be?
I love that question, and I'm thinking to myself, I was going to say something. I will, but you might not. I thought, maybe I could be like the ward sexual therapist.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to have to wait till you get married, you should have somebody teaching all this stuff before you get married.
Sure.
Because,
the ward, okay.
But, so I'm kind of half serious about that and half not. I primary piano player was, I've done that before, and uh-huh. that is the awesomest calling, because you're sitting there and these little kids look at you and they can see you with long hair and an earring and you're up there playing music and they think you're cool. I love that one. I'll do that one anytime somebody asks.
Okay. You hear that Avenue's Second Ward?
I don't think that's up there anymore.
Yeah. And then finally, yes. What is your favorite part of your faith? Doesn't have to necessarily be LDS Church, just
part of my faith is my faith in the goodness of people. I have faith that people are basically good, no matter where they're from. I have faith in people, and I love that, because the minute you lose that, you might as well just crawl in a hole and be poopy.
Do we have to use the word poopy?
The alternative's not much better.
Yeah, that's true. Now, before I let you go, we're almost done. I want to ask you, you made a comment kind of off the air. You've been working with David Archuleta.
Mm-hmm.
And he just recently, I think a week ago now,
yeah,
not even a week ago, went into the MTC and going to be serving a mission.
Yes.
Go ahead.
What do you want me to say?
I mean, knowing him, I obviously don't know him. He's someone that we wanted to get on the Cultural Hall when he returns home. That's my plan, to get him in to talk about it. Difficult for him to do it? Difficult situation?
I think David will. He is. Let me say this about David, first of all, because a lot of people immediately don't want to like David. I'm talking about the... there are a lot of people that don't like his style of music.
Sure.
And so they immediately think, oh, he's sugar sweet and all that. David is truly one of the, he's a talented, phenomenal musician. Having just worked for 2 weeks with him in the studio, singing all these great songs, we mm-hmm. sang songs like Everybody Hurts by REM, mm-hmm. Angel, Sarah McLachlan, some great Bridge Over Troubled Waters. The album's a cover album. And I'm listening to him sing. He's barely 21, but he's like 14. Mm-hmm. He's maturity. And he's singing, and he's phenomenal. He never sings out of tune. He's got this incredible voice I wish I could play some tracks for you, but it's unbelievable. And so I will say right away, the kid is incredibly talented. He's got a lot of things that are unusual that are going to be tough for him on a mission. In other words, there's a fan club in his country, and I'm not saying where he is because you may know where he is. Sure. Some people do, but I won't say it publicly. But anyways, in South America and in the country where he is, there's a fan club for David Archuleta. So he's going to be a normal missionary, but it'll never be normal. Mm-hmm. And he has a lot of responsibility with his family at home. Some of his income, I'm sure, supports his family. But there's been some church members step up and help him out and help guide him with his money and what. And he doesn't have a lot of money, less money than you think.
Sure, I would imagine.
It's an unusual circumstance. I hope it doesn't gobble him up. I hope he can just, in his heart, he wants to do the right thing. He's a sweet boy, and he has every intent of just doing a great job. So I hope he does well. I hope it doesn't eat him up, and I hope that his mission companions, I told him, I said, David, probably your first companion is going to be like into Norwegian death metal, and he's going to like just hate you. And he's, really, Kurt, you don't like me? Oh, I never thought about that.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway, the album's going to come out sometime.
I was going to ask you.
It's going to come out sometime in June. I was just hired to produce it, and I'm working with a guy named John Hancock, who's a great producer, worked with Cascade.
Oh, cool.
And so it's kind of Kurt meets Cascade. It's a hip meets a guy. And but we did covers, and it's going to be a great album. I don't know what it's going to be called, but it'll be out probably in July or August. Okay. And it's going to help support him, to be honest, on his
mission.
That's great.
Yeah. So the final thing that we ask people to do is to climb up on the Ramiumptum and let people know where they can get in touch with you, follow you, befriend you, etc.
Yeah, actually, I think I've reached the friend level on Facebook, so which I think is disgusting. There shouldn't be a limit here.
No.
But anyway, you can try. I always have a few people drop out, especially when I appear on shows like this. So yeah. They'll probably space now. But
plenty after this one.
Facebook, it's just /Kurt Bester or KurtBester.com is my website. And just doing a brand new album that haven't done an album without Jingle Bells for 10 years.
Will that come out?
Probably also in about July or August. But yeah, it's
available in all the normal places.
Probably not. It will be available, but it's at this stage, it'll probably be order online. I don't think, are there record stores anymore?
No.
Yeah. So
single book and tape.
And guys your age, you don't even buy stuff. So it'll probably be downloaded for free at a P2P site near you.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Kurt Bester, for taking some time with us. Absolutely. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. When the time comes that you travel home, that you may travel home in safety. And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.